I'm sure you all know the man sitting next to me, legendary game designer Will Wright. Will, first of all, thanks for coming here to Microsoft. We are here at Microsoft Research. And actually, what brings you here?
I came here to talk about ants.
Uh-huh, okay. How'd that go?
It went really well.
It's just Microsoft has a large community of ant-loving folk?
Well, yeah. I mean, the ants offer a lot of lessons to humans, you know, okay. And we don't fully appreciate their what they're trying to teach us.
You know what? And I'm going to have to agree with you because I just listened to you speak for about an hour and a half. And you know what? At first, it started off all about the society of ants and different kinds of ants and ants' castes and ants' jobs and how exactly. Because you did bring it back. And if you can sort of briefly summarize how you did start a conversation about ants and then bring it on over into gaming and game development.
Well, ants exhibit this really interesting complexity, problem-solving abilities through very low-level, simple little mechanisms through how they communicate, how they cooperate, how they specialize that leads to very interesting emergent intelligence strategies as opposed to a top-down, you know, here's the way we're going to do it, everybody follow the master plan. And so I think understanding the way you can achieve high complexity, high fitness results through utter simplicity and low-level decision-making is really valuable.
Now, is this something you studied, the culture of ants, before you started game designing, or is this something that you sort of figured out afterwards and maybe enriched your game designing, you know, experience?
Well, I always was into ants and read about them as a kid. At some point, my fascination with ants caused me to make a game about ants called Sim Ant.
Okay. And now, was that your first game, though, was it?
No, it was like my fourth or fifth game.
Okay.
But at that point, I just kind of read every single book there was on ants and really dove into it and got even more fascinated with them.
Yeah. And now the culture of ants extends into even, you know, your latest version of Sims, correct?
Well, actually, the behavioral model for the Sims AI was based upon the communication that ants exhibit with pheromone trails and broadcasting through the environmental intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
So the Sims AI was very much inspired by the mechanisms that ants use to communicate and coordinate.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you're also working on a game called Spore. Now, would you take those same properties that, you know, you incorporated into Sims and in the Ant Society? Was that also being brought into the Spore game?
In Spore, it's actually more about the community. When we look at the community and the way they relate to each other, what they make, how they share things, the processes and dynamics between people that are playing the game, we're now taking these lessons out of the simulator and into how do we use them to grow and nurture a player community.
Mm-hmm. And now, you also talked a lot about player communities and internet communities and gaming communities. Explain to everyone else a little bit how important the gamers are in terms of building and developing the games itself.
Well, players love making stuff in the game. They love sharing stuff that they've made in the game. In some sense, the community becomes almost the biggest draw for a game, even aside from how entertaining the game is. Who they're meeting through the game, the type of the things they're doing with other players,
mm-hmm.
become almost the biggest aspect of the value for a game. So unless you can build a thriving, you know, strong, growing player community around a game, you know, nowadays the game is almost destined to fail without that.
Really? Now, did that come as a surprise to you, or were you sort of anticipating this when you launched your first games?
Well, we saw this slowly develop, especially with the growth of the internet. My first games were pre-internet, and I saw people doing these kind of low-level file-sharing things on bulletin board systems and whatnot.
And were you like, that's so cool?
Well, it was kind of amazing just that they would go to the trouble, you know, and that they were so proud of what they'd made in the game, they wanted to share it. Even if only five people downloaded it and said that was cool, that gave them a huge amount of motivation. And now that we have the internet and people can go, you know, everyone knows how to go online and kind of connect with other players, we're seeing it just explode. And, these communities become these amazingly elaborate things, you know, even relative to the game designs.
And now, what would you say, if you can name one, which I hope you can, some of the things or one of the things that really, like, blew your mind the most that, like, one of the players just out there in the community did or created?
Where you were
like, wow, you're awesome.
I've seen it happen so many times. Somebody took The Sims and built an adventure game out of it, you know, capturing screen captures. People have been making movies in The Sims, thousands of them. I mean, and really, really, some of them very good. SimCity people have used for education, obviously, also for contests. We had one kid who was living in New Hampshire. There were five mayoral candidates. He invited all the people over to his house to play SimCity and wrote an article in the local newspaper about how each of them approached playing SimCity.
Wow.
And it was amazing. It was a great article.
Did it predict the actual election?
actually, I don't remember. The incumbent refused to play. He wanted to have the rule book sent to him first before he would agree to come to the kid's house to play. He was the only one that didn't complain. I know he lost.
Okay.
So it was one of the people that actually showed up and played.
Basically, if you don't play, you lose. That's the moral there?
Well, the fact that this 9-year-old kid kind of understood a really effective way to figure out who the best mayoral candidate was while the adults were reading probably crafted position papers was really amazing, I thought.
Very cool. Now, you do mention something in your speech about how, you know, when you're directing a movie, you can always predict where to put the camera because you know what's going to happen next, you know, dependent on a certain, you know, a sequence of events. Where in your games, in The Sim, you sort of don't really know necessarily what's going to happen next. And this is totally off basis, but how would you relate that back to your thoughts or feelings on reality television?
Reality television, in fact, is much closer to a game for that exact reason. But you have to remember, in reality television, what you're seeing is an edited version of probably 10 times more footage that they shot. And so in some sense, they are almost like in the position that I want to put the computer in, where the players in the reality show are the free will of the player.
Right.
The computer is looking at that and trying to figure out how to shape that into a dramatic story. But it has to use that. You know, you can't go in and invent kind of events.
Right.
So in some sense, I think that's fairly close to where I see like games going in a storytelling sense, except the producer of the show is now in the role of the computer.
Right.
And the players of the reality show are in the role of the player, the game player.
Pretty awesome. And in fact, in even in the games, new games like Halo 3, you can be the role of the director if you play with any of their movie making properties. I don't know if you have.
I've seen it. Yeah. The Machinima thing is just amazing to me, that people can use these things to tell stories. And I think the player stories, by far and away the most interesting stories I've ever heard from games, are the ones the players tell.
Yeah, absolutely. So where do you see gaming going in the future? I mean, do you think that like action and adventure and first-person shooters are really taking over? Because it's obviously Halo 3, huge release, broad market, and maybe The Sims are becoming more niche? Or like, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think we're actually hitting a wider and wider group of people playing games, which is kind of arguing actually for almost more casual experiences, or at least more kind of approachable experiences, that somebody can pick up the thing, start playing in 2 minutes without having to understand a very large, deep rule set.
Right.
So... but also, I think that the game...
pick up and play games, I mean, obviously, that's huge.
But also, I think the games need to allow players to pursue different goal states. So it's not just destroy the dragon or whatever. But and the games need to be able to adapt more thoroughly to a player's skill level, interests, abilities.
Absolutely. So along those same lines, what's next for you after Spore? Everyone always wants to know, what are you doing next? What are you doing next? Maybe you're just chilling.
Vacation.
No, but really.
Really.
We know you're up to something.
It's going to be something really cool.
Really?
Yeah.
You can only get information like that from me, Laura Foy, on Channel 8 and 10. All right, well, in final closing, last question, what are some of your favorite games that you like to play besides your own?
I like Go, the board game, a lot.
Okay.
I always like
Parcheesi.
No, I don't like Parcheesi. That sucks.
What about a computer game?
Computer game. I like the Battlefield series.
Yes.
I like Advance War on my DS. Love Civilization. Yeah. I like the old pinball construction set stuff. I like Flight Simulator a lot. Pretty wide diversity of things.
Very cool. Well, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Will Wright, look for what he's doing next because it's going to be cool.